All right, guys, so before we get into this Wyclef Jean interview, I just want to send a big shout out to our sponsor, Tracker, the TRACKR.com. So basically, Tracker is this tiny little aluminum disc. You can take it, you put it in your wallet, you can attach it to your phone, attach it on your keychain to your keys, and it syncs with your phone and it's Bluetooth enabled, so you can basically find your stuff if you ever happen to lose one of those items. Myself personally, I now keep it in my wallet and it's been working like a charm. I did a few little tests, stashed it somewhere, used it. It can emit a sound, or you can just track it down using your phone or somebody else's. It's really pretty amazing technology that makes sure that you will never, ever lose one of your possessions ever again. So if you want to get it, all you got to do is go to thetracker.com, and promo code NOJUMPER will get you 20% off any of your orders. That's it. thetracker.com. So enjoy the interview, and thank you very much to Tracker for making this possible. No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. And today, perhaps astonishingly, we have Wyclef Jean in the building. How you doing, man?
What up, family?
How you doing, man?
Back from November. You know, I was gone for a minute.
You've been gone that whole time.
You already know, baby. We here, man.
Amazing.
What's goody?
So when you call yourself a hip-hop guitarist, you really ain't lying. It's because since the second you came in here, you had it around your neck and you've been playing it nonstop. Giving lessons, everything.
Yeah, you know, in the hood, some of us used to be rocking them big gold chains. I used to walk around with a guitar on my neck.
I respect that.
So yeah, now we love the guitar, you know. I call it like hip-hop guitarist because, you know, as a young, coming up as a Fuji, a young producer, like you digging in the crates. And when you going like in the crates, you don't like discriminate with the music. Like you go through Police, Synchronicity, mixing it with Run DMC, like mixing it with Bach, you know what I mean? So I call myself a hip-hop guitarist because I'm a composition, like, of all forms of music, and to me that's what hip-hop is.
So did you know about, or were you playing guitar before you started rapping, or before you like became obsessed with music in general?
Well, I came from Haiti.
Yeah.
And I came to the U.S. when I was 10. I lived in Brooklyn, Marlboro Projects. By the time I was like 17, I was playing like 10 instruments. So for me, it was more like survival, you feel me? So it was like, you know, we up in the hood, we in the projects. It's like a gun or a guitar at the time, you feel me? So I remember my mom bought me the guitar. So while my friends was like playing Atari in the crib, I was just like figuring out the instruments. By the time I became 17, first music video ever, I was an extra, was Eric B and Rakim.
Really?
And it was a song called Don't Sweat the Technique, because I was obsessed with Rakim. So I just always had that love for like instruments and music records too. Like I love like just showing up in the park with my boys and just setting up and rocking for the people.
But learning to play 17 instruments or whatever, were you doing it out of a sense that you knew that this was the thing that was going to take you out of your current situation at that time?
No, I ain't really thinking like that. I just knew that music was survival. Like I did music because it felt like it gave me a sense of belonging. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't just like we gonna sing these songs, you know what I mean? Like mama on welfare, you feel me? Like we gonna sing these songs and get her out of these situations.
Right.
So always sing for the struggle, you dig?
But it always came supernaturally to you, because a lot of people never even learn one instrument, but to learn 17, I assume that you probably gained like a massive understanding of the overall picture of what music is, or what different instruments were capable of. And you could almost kind of see that in some of your albums, that the level of musicianship goes way beyond a lot of what we've seen in hip hop.
Yeah, I mean, really, for me, I remember when I saw Kanye for the first time, and we was having
what
like
year?
This was like maybe like 7 or 8 years ago.
Okay,
and
oh,
I
so remember pretty recently.
Yeah, I remember we was having a conversation, and he was talking about Gone to November, and the way he broke down the analytics and that was crazy. He was like, "Yo, with the video, then the string section comes out, and the girls jump out of the airport." You know what I mean? So for me, it's always like good when I see like younger producers, like, because for me, like I look up to Quincy Jones. And so for me, it's always a mixture, like whether if it's trap or hip hop, it don't matter to me. Like the software just converted the software, you know what I mean? It was once hardware. So I like to mix it up, man.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, what's crazy is that my first memory when I'm like 9 or 10 years old of you guys, and also of BET, it was
the Mona Lisa or no Nappy Heads video on BET. I'm like 9 years old.
Yeah.
And it was just such a revelation to me because I had only seen hip hop from like a pretty one-sided perspective up until then.
Yeah. It's so crazy, right? So you're talking about, yo, Mona Lisa, can I get a date on Friday? And if you're busy, I wouldn't chiba chiba, y'all. Well, I'm a Libra, y'all. Y'all already know. What's crazy about that is when the Fugees came in the game, everything you see all the kids are doing now, we was doing that in 95, 96. So what does that mean? We were singing and rhyming. Like, because to me, it didn't make a difference whether you were singing or rhyming as long as the poetry was matching what you're doing with the story. But back then, in the beginning, you got to prove your point. You feel me? Because the Fugees was coming in the era where we had Biggie, right? So we opened up for Biggie Smalls and some shows like Puff. Puff already know, you know what I'm saying? The Fugees caused hell.
Yeah.
So for me, we even like did a show, Tupac in Europe, different shows. And it was like, yo, this is a different form of hip hop. What is this called? Because y'all ain't necessarily saying y'all going to pull a gun and bang, bang him in the head. Or y'all going to sell this crack. I said, yo, we from the projects, right? I'm from the projects. Lawrence from the suburbs. I said, at the end of the day, the perspective of the struggle story is told in many ways, you know? If you pay attention when I'm talking about ready or not, I already say I'm going to pull a gun. Because at 20-something, I felt like the only way to get out of the ghetto was to pull a gun. Then when you get older, your mom be like, oh, that's not the way of life. This is how you got to deal with it. So I always try to take the youth just through the perspective. Like, I never make myself be like, oh, don't do this, right? Like, oh, don't be in a gang. I don't say that because I know what it is when you got to go from that one block to three housing projects down. You're going to be part of something. So I told him, look, I joined a hip hop gang at the end of the day. So just try to always get that alternative. You dig?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. Like, to what extent did it occur to you that what you guys were doing was different or revolutionary at that time?
Well, I mean, for me, it was, I thought I was going to be like some like jazz major or something. I always loved music. And so I remember the Booger basement is my uncle's basement. And everybody rode through the basement, like whether if it was Akon. I remember like, so the Refugees, we was on one side of East Orange, and then the Outsiders was another clique on the other side. And Eminem used to roll with the Outsiders too.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when you mentioned him on the Nori interview.
Yeah. So that was a whole thing. Like, so Jersey had something crazy going on at the time.
Right.
And we all just loved to rhyme. We loved to MC. So for me, you're doing it in the basement and, you know, we did the first album, which was called Blunted on Reality, and that ain't really connect, but the live shows was connecting. And on the second album, I got on the production. Salam Remy got on the production. Just things just started changing. Diamond D. So for me, you know, you like, yo, the first one went, you know, 30,000. You like, yo, maybe we'll go like 100,000 on this one. And it goes to like 20 million. So it's like, but the Fugees was not an overnight success. That's what people got to understand. And people don't even know, like, my first record deal wasn't even with the Fugees.
Really?
Yeah, I was 18 years old. I was signed to Big Beat Records, Craig Kalman. So the grind has always been, it's been a long grind. I remember Lauren, like, being, like, 14, 15, trying to do, you know, like, sister act, different things. So the grind was really, like, a 7-8 year grind before we really took off.
Right. Yeah, they always, especially during that time period, it's like you had to grind for so long to even get a chance to get a deal or to get an album out. Getting an album out was impossible at that time.
I call it the gas station, man. It's like, welcome to the gas station. The traffic in the gas station is crazy. Yeah. Everybody coming to pump gas, you feel me? And the reality of it is for you to stand out, you know, it really takes, it takes a lot. And I always say that. I was like, it don't really matter, like, because my daughter, sometimes, you know, I'm playing with her, and she's 12, you feel me? And she would do a flow. And then I'd be like, Jama me cool me stop like me walk punch me walk punch fools up, and I'm speed rapping. She's like, Dad, that sound like Migos. And it's so dope, right? Because you got to think about it, where how every style constantly keep coming back over and over again. Then I played her Das FX, and she heard him go bum skibidi bum skibidi bum hunt. I got that door rumpa pum pum and knock a fee fire foe. She like, Dad, he sound like Migos. I said, well, actually, you know. It's just dope, like, when you could compare, like, hip-hop with different generations. So, for me, that's what's the beauty. That's the whole beauty of the game.
Yeah. So, But from her perspective, do you think that she genuinely like appreciates Dos FX, or is able to just see a little bit of the connection to the stuff that she listens to?
Just a little bit of the connection. Mm-hmm. She's a brand new generation. That's what I was saying. I remember when I first was coming back after I'd done try to become president of Haiti.
Yeah.
And I remember coming back. I remember being on Dave Chappelle, and me and Dave Chappelle was, he was filming the Dave Chappelle show at the time. And I remember he was doing the Dylon skit.
Yeah.
Dylon, Dylon, you're getting too close. And I was just sitting there in the corner, man, you know, after I had like a L, and I was just chilling. And I was like, if I was president, I'll get elected on Friday. I said, and Dave was like, what's that, man? I said, just saying, hey, roll the cameras, man. We got to record that now. So for me, just that spontaneity, to me, is like really how magic happens. You know what I'm saying to you when it comes to that stuff.
What, do you remember when you met Chappelle or what your relationship was like with him early on?
That's my man, yo.
Yeah.
I mean, Chappelle's the man. First of all, when it comes to the culture, Chappelle preserves the culture. And anybody who, because you got to understand, right? For you to give it all up, for you to be like, you know what? I'm not gonna, y'all can hold on to these zeros. I'm gonna make the zeros, but for right now, I can't compromise the art. Like, that's not an easy thing to do. You feel me? That's when you know, like Chappelle just came back and his comeback is so enormous and it's all over the place because people respect him and say, you know what I mean? Like, this is not just an ordinary person. He don't just talk. Mm-hmm. Like, he really believe in what he's saying. So I always use Chappelle for an example. We naturally just clicked, you know what I'm saying?
Right. So, but did you have a moment where you kind of thought about doing that? There must have been a moment where you were making so much money and you had so much pressure on you to do different types of music and go on tour all the time. Did you ever feel like taking that step back that he did?
I just want to send a big, big shout out to our sponsor, MeUndies. MeUndies.com is the number one place. If you want fresh, comfortable, amazing, soft underwear, let me tell you, ever since I became a subscriber to the MeUndies program, I get these packages with the dopest underwear in solid colors, in weird shapes, patterns, everything. Every single month, I get this stuff in the mail, and I just love it. MeUndies.com. It's an amazing, amazing service. MeUndies.com/NoJumper is the place to go if you want to get your hands on some MeUndies. And let me just tell you, this will revolutionize your life. This is the softest underwear you've ever, ever felt. I mean, Rico Reckless told me that Versace could compete. I don't personally believe him. I haven't done the test yet, but MeUndies for me personally is my favorite underwear in the entire world. And I think that everybody in the No Jumper family who can wear the same size as me, such as Chris Long, would completely agree with that. So head on over to MeUndies.com/NoJumper to get 20% off your first order. Please enjoy this interview.
There must have been a moment where you were making so much money and you had so much pressure on you to do different types of music and go on tour all the time. Did you ever feel like taking that step back that he did?
I did. I mean, I took 8 years off. Like, after 100 million records, mm-hmm. The last record I did was like Sweetest Girl with Akon and Lil Wayne. After that, I was like, you know what? I gotta do more than music. Like, you know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. I went back to the village where I came from, try to help the folks, even try to run for president. You know, even though they took me out the race, I always say I helped make my man become the president. Mm-hmm. And all I was trying to do was break that cycle in Haiti because we had an older regime government.
Right.
So once that happened, I felt like, you know, it's accomplished, but honestly, it's not like I was like, oh man, I'm doing bad or I'm falling off. Let me go do. Nah, man, I'm talking about hips don't lie, like breaking all kinds of records. Mm. Like, I have a real publishing catalog. When you hear pump, 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 that's Clef. It's real publishing.
Yeah.
It's like, it's no joke. So for me, it's real like that. I always felt like music was a natural gift,
mm-hmm.
but. Man, I watched some of my peers commit suicide, dog. Mm-hmm. I watched some people go under through drugs like you wouldn't imagine. Even some people in our industry blew their heads off. And people be like, yo, with so much money, like, how do you maintain? I mean, dog, I was barely like 25, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, you barely 25, man. You sitting, like, comfortably, like, you sitting on, like, 40 to 50 mil, like at 25, right? You go in a room, man. It's like a line. Hey, you know, it's cocaine all over the place. You feel what I'm saying to you? Everybody doing lines. You get caught up in that trap. You know what I'm saying?
You ever get caught up in that?
everyone gets caught up in that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like Clef will never, the thing about me, I don't have what's called an addicted attitude, right? So I don't have an addicted, so I'm the one that could tell you, yo, man, don't do this, don't do that, because it's it will mess you up, right? But once again, I always be like, the fact that I could say, you know, you can go to rehab, is because I understand what that addiction can do to people, and I watched it destroy a lot of my friends. You feel me? So, but at the end of the day, I don't give that perspective of a lot of artists. I hate when people be playing like bigger than thou. You know, like, yo, you shouldn't be doing certain things. When you do these things, this is what will happen. You know what I mean? Cause my daddy was a minister, bro. My dad was a preacher.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Dude was like, yo, you can't serve two masters. You have to decide which master you're gonna serve. Are you gonna serve God or you gonna serve the devil? You must pick one. And I really ain't understand what that meant till I got older. You feel me? And I really understood. It was more metaphor, because at the end of the day, he's just saying, like, when you caught up in the evil ways, you know, always remember that positive energy could overrule, but you gotta go there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. So we talk about your musical influences a lot, but was your dad a big influence on you? Because being a minister, a reverend, like, you learn to control a crowd, and you seeing your dad do that from a young age must have been powerful.
Yo, let me tell you a story, because Uncle Clef got stories.
I bet.
Real talk, I'm going to tell you something nobody know. This is exclusive right here.
I'm ready.
Right, because you brought my dad, and my dad is personal to me because he passed away, and personal. So this is what I see my dad. My dad absolutely had no fear. So we left Brooklyn. We moved to Jersey. And my dad had a vision. He said he going to build a church in the hood. We go to South Orange Avenue. Dude puts a church in the hood. On the left side of the church, small Italian joint. You feel what I'm saying to you? At the time, there was a few mobsters that was running that spot on the left side in South Orange Avenue. On the right side, we had an Irish pub. You feel me? And then so the Haitians are right in the middle. But my dad scored big, because when he bought that church, there was a big parking lot with it. So that basically mean, like, anybody who's coming now, this parking lot is it. So I remember one night, a lot of the mob, you know what I'm saying, they parked the car in the church in the church garage. And it's so funny, right? Because I used to watch mob stories as a kid, right? So once I see the El Dorados, you feel what I'm saying to you at the time? I'm a Jersey boy, you feel me? I'm like, yo, my dad look out the window. You're like, who put all these cars here? And I'm like, oh, man, they about to whack my dad. My dad so fearlessly goes outside, and I'm following him. And he's just like, yo, he knocks on that door. He's like, who's this? He's like, open the door. I want to know who parked the car. Hey, Vin, come to the front. It's the preacher. I think you need to talk to him real quick. So Vinny comes to the front, and my dad's there. Vinny's like, come on, preacher. You know I love Christ. Don't you see my chain? We all love Christ. And it's so funny, the respect the dude gave my dad. And my dad was like, you know what? You know, y'all could park y'all cars there, but make sure y'all pay y'all tithes in church. And this is just what I learned, like, from my dad. At the end of the day, I think a lot of times he taught me, like, versus you pushing people away, you have to take it in.
Right.
And you have to be completely fearless.
Yeah.
And then if you could be fearless, then at the end of the day, you can help people. And at the same time, you get friends that you never thought would be your friend. You feel what I'm saying to you?
Like, your dad going into that environment, if he had been 2% nervous about it, they probably would have disrespected him and been like, get out of here. But he went in there 100% confident.
Yeah, my dad barefooted, straight out of Haiti. You know what I'm saying to you? So I think the mob could have hired my dad. You know what I'm saying to you? But it was just so funny, because here's a mob story, but it's a different story. It's a story of a preacher who walks in and he says, yo, y'all cars, y'all can't just park it there. And the conversation turns into, all right, we'll pay our tithes. You know what I'm saying? Respect. So sometimes I think if you approach people with a respect factor, whoever it is, the outcome could definitely be better. That's what I learned from my father. That's why I respect everybody. You dig?
That's amazing. Yeah, I feel like we're really starting to, like, put together a composite sketch of like all your different influences that explained why the Fugees were able to be so big, so revolutionary, so early on. Because you had an influence like your dad, and then that overall Jersey scene that you were kind of involved in, where you had a lot of different influences. Were you guys using the word conscious to describe what you were doing at the time, or was that kind of like a media invention over time?
It definitely was a media invention, right? Because it's like knowledge itself is knowledge itself. And they almost go, well, conscious rap, gangster rap, slack rap. So they put different, right? And then you had that with reggae too. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like with reggae, you can have like gunman, you know, you can have slackness lyrics, all of that. So that's all always been around, you know what I mean? So I do look at it, looking back at it now, it was definitely a higher level of consciousness, you know what I'm saying? In the sense of like, yo, we got to do more than just the music. We knew that straight from the gate, you know what I mean?
But did you see it as like what the Fugees were doing was fundamentally like in contrast to what Biggie was doing because his music was perceived as being gangster rap at the time?
Well, I mean, I grew up in Brooklyn before moving to Jersey, and coming from the community, it was just, it's two different authors, right? So Biggie, Bed-Stuy author, right? Wyclef, Marlboro Project author. How do these two authors explain the projects in two different ways? That's how I look at it. Yep. So if I was to tell you, I don't know what a crack vial looked like. If I tell you I never had a crack vial in my hand, if I was to tell you, you know what I mean, I couldn't take a gun and put it back apart, I'd be lying to you at a young age. But as far as like writing is within an author, the Fugees, I just felt like, okay, so Big and them had one side of the story, which was very important. And I felt like we had another side, the Fugees, Tribe Called Quest. It was still like within the, these communities, but it was just the Outcast, just a different way to say it. But that's what made it amazing when you have different authors speaking different.
Yeah, and it's just amazing because I felt like at the time there was this real deliberate effort by a lot of people to try to explain away how there's smart hip hop and then there's bad hip hop. Or, you know, you had the very same contrast with like the Down South shit that was coming out versus like the conscious shit. And people wanted to say, oh no, Master P's not hip hop. Which to me, like, was kind of fundamentally offensive from the beginning, because it's like he might have different aesthetic values than you, but he's fundamentally doing the same thing that this was all founded upon.
Yeah, I mean, it's a culture, right? And the culture is a sense of hope. You see what I'm saying? Like, that's like when you hear hip hop and the voice speaks out, it's a sense of hope, right? So when P go, you know I'm about it. Yeah, about, like you can feel it. If you from, right, while people was trying to figure out what it was, people in Brooklyn, Flatbush Avenue, the minute he said about it, everyone got what he meant and they felt it as if it was a Biggie Smalls record or two. It didn't really matter because you felt like that. Because for me, a lot of times I think my man Too Short, too dope. Like at the end of the day, all of this stuff was influencing all of us that was listening to hip hop. Because for us, it wasn't really a separation, I'm telling you. Like it was either it was dope or not dope, like when we were listening to it. And I felt at times like the media had to find a way to explain it. A writer had to find a way to justify, oh, these rappers are smarter than these rappers because they're using these words. And I, you know, that's all bullshit.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it had to do with the media trying to explain away like, oh, this is rap music that white people seem peculiarly drawn to because they looked at it as being fundamentally different. And, you know, I've seen that my whole life with like, you know, I loved Jay-Z for 10 years, and then remember he put out the Gray, or they put out the Gray album with all the Beatles samples. He didn't put it out, but Danger Mouse did. And then I, like, all my white friends are like, oh, Jay-Z is really cool now. And I'm like, you've really got it all twisted. Like, the original production was the cool part, not throwing in a bunch of Beatles samples.
Well, I think, once again, I think people has to justify and they have to explain it. And as things grow, they become within a commercial space, right? And the thing about art, right? And the Beatles thing to me was still clever, right? Because all it does was it takes it to a level. Because it's sort of like you said, it brought a whole new consciousness, a whole group of people. Because it's sort of like when DJ Khaled takes Maria and he does it over with Rihanna and it's super dope.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you could look online and people be like, yo, the Maria, the you know, the original version with Clef and Santana, blah, blah, blah. Then there's other people who goes, what is that? Like, we just know the Santana, the Rihanna and Khalid one. Then they go back And then they listen and be like, oh, who's this Wyclef Jean? Oh, he did this. Then they go back and they start to research. Mm-hmm. So I think, once again, like, the idea of discovery is also dope. You know, they always say once a generation has completely figured you out, mm-hmm. And you can't reinvent yourself. I mean, it's basically a wrap. Like, you just have to hold on to the legacy, you dig?
Was there a time where you felt like you had basically done all that you could do with music, and then time made it obvious to you that, like, oh, I've never done fully what I can do because there'll always be a new generation that could understand what I have to offer?
Yeah, I think definitely. For me, I remember, like, in my career, there was like, oh, he's going to burn out early. He's gonna, you know, he's doing so much so fast. And I mean, here we are. Like, you can go online, this song Hendrix is streaming over 40 million. Mm-hmm. I used to do CDs and albums. Now it's a streaming generation. It's nuts to me. But true reinvention, I learned that. Like, being in the studio with, like, Michael Jackson, which was one of the coolest things
I've
ever experienced. This had to be... I was like 29. Okay. I'm 47 now. But it was crazy just watching them. I'm like, oh, this is the Jackson 5 guy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yo, this is like, you know, I wanna rock with you, dude. And I'm like, yo, he's right here. And my daughter knows him. And she could go back to every Jackson 5 record. And one thing I learned from Michael and Quincy, what I took away from these two men is like, the pulse of music is always in the youth. So as long as you forever think like a child, you good, because a child will always just be raw and innocent with mm-hmm. the music. Music is vulnerability, right? Mm-hmm. So once people start to get older, right, then they want to be cooler.
They build up a shell.
And they want to be cooler. So then they build this shell. And while they build in the shell, they're cutting out an entire generation, opposed to just leave yourself how you are. You know what I'm saying? We do music so people could feel it. You know right. what I mean?
You seem like you kind of came into the game with a very open-minded perspective on how infinitely music could expand because you had so many influences early on, like from all the different, like, you know, seeing, that's one thing that I just see constantly is that there's just this huge, like, kids who see the world at a young age or see a lot of different scenarios, a lot of different ways of life, then they're able to, like, translate that into success a lot more easily, I think.
It's deep, like what you said, when I look back at it, like, coming up, Columbia Records, I remember Big L, like, this is all of us just going through the Sony hallways, Nas, and all of that. And
I'd love to see you walking by Big L and Nas in the hallway, get a quick photo of that.
Yeah, we all in the hallways trying Amazing, to figure man. It out, right, from three different boroughs. But it was so deep to what you said, because it's almost like the Fugees always had to overprove themselves. Mm-hmm. Because it was like, even if you watch that documentary on Stretch and Barbito, they ain't even want to put us on. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like, here comes, you know? And then when they put us on and we start ripping everyone's neck off, they go, wow, these kids are dope. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And to me, a lot of it has to do with, like, the perspective on how it's perceived, you know, like, this is alternative. This is, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. the Fugees broke a lot of that barrier, man. I ain't gonna front.
You guys were so, like, 94 was the first album?
Yeah, 94 was Blunted on Reality. But this is what bugs people out. The other, I think like a week ago, there was a documentary on me called Unsung, uh-huh. TV1. And one of the people that talked was Curtis Blow. And Curtis Blow is like, yo, I met this young man when he was 15. I did his first demo. I knew he was going places because at 15, he was rhyming in like six different languages. It was not. And then people trip out. They start blowing up my phone. They're like, yo, you go so far back to the culture where Curtis Blow. I said, yeah. I said, that's why I appreciate the art so much, because understanding Curtis Blow helped me appreciate Dr. Dre more, and wanting to be like, oh, let me find these drums that could work like a Dr. Dre drums. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for me, like I said, it's all about that culture, man. Mm.
I want to talk about lyricism too, because you have that battle rap background. Do you think that really, like, informed your early work in particular? Like, because you have this crazy musical background, and for a lot of people that would sort of overshadow the lyricism. But I feel like that's another big strength in, like, your early work, is that you were able to straddle both of those. The lyrics were crazy, and the music was right there with it.
Yeah, so I call it, like, my secret weapon, because I'm always underestimated. Because I show up on the block with a guitar or a bass or something, it's like, you're not supposed to know how to battle rap. Like, the two just don't go along with each other. You feel me? So when it starts out, I remember my boys, like, they knew, you know, this, we used to make money like that on the block. So, you know, 10 rounds, the first three rounds I set you up because you think I'm really whack because I have the guitar. And then after the third round, it's a rap. For me, right, there was like, yo, battle rappers could never cross over and turn it into songs. You feel me? The good thing about me was I was always writing songs. The reason, man, I became so deadly in battle rapping was because it was the block. This is how you proved yourself. Coming from Haiti, I had to express myself, right? If I ain't gonna use my knife, I ain't gonna use my gun, I'm gonna have to find a way to get it out. And if I'm pissed off, I gotta say something. If I feel good, I have to say something. So I just became like crazy a battle rapper. It was great because then now when we go on Stretch and Barbita, we go on Flex, we go on different things, I'm able to take that skill from the block and just prove myself, like, right there. You know what I'm saying to you? Yeah. Till today, like, it really don't matter. Like, I always tell people, write 16 bars a day. I always keep 16. Anyone who's listening right now, you know what I mean? You could look on my gram, catch me at the next show and be like, yo, Clef, I heard you on the podcast. I'm ready to go. I will give you the microphone, and I guarantee you it's going to be hard to take this old man out. 16 bars a clip per day. I always say that's what a good wordsmith is, always.
And so, but do you get back in touch with that younger version of yourself when you just, like, can just find those bars within yourself? Like, you don't know what's going to come out onto the paper when you attempt to do that. But that is very much what it is to be young, is that you don't know where the voice is coming from. You just know you have something to say.
Well, battle rap is a culture. So as long as you stay with the pulse of it. So today, battle rap has converted. One of the biggest leagues is my good friend Smack, DVD, URL. You know what I mean? You have King of the Dot. You have We Go Hard TV.
Do you still pay attention to that subculture? That's really interesting because I feel like a lot of people in the music industry just completely write it off.
Well, I mean, once again, like I told you, like, I'm a culture bunny. Yeah. Like, I was on a plane, like on a jet, reading policies, and on my other computer, I was watching at the time a Murder Mook battle. And my policy advisor was like, yo, how could you do this?
Right.
And I'm like, the same way you do what you do. You know what I'm saying to you? Mm-hmm. I'm like, yo, this is the culture. So for me, because I'm tapped into the culture, I have not lost that frequency. But when I look at those kids, I see my younger self. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so being that I see my younger self, it makes me get excited and be like, okay, I still got to write that 16 bars a day. You know
right.
what I mean?
Just for the love of the art.
Yeah.
But how do you feel about the state of lyricism and rap these days? Because it feels like, in a lot of ways, a lot of people have the opinion that you don't really have to be all that good at rapping to make a popular rap song these days.
Well, I think what happens is the perception, right, on the internet, that's what I said, now everyone's preference is their preference. You're going to have a wave. Mm-hmm. A radio always have a wave. And waves come and go. That's what the radio does. But if you're like, yo, man, I'm trying to find MCs that spit, they're online.
Yeah.
You can find them. If you're like, yo, I'm trying to find rappers that's rhyming over dance beat, you can find them. It's just the wave that has taken over the radio now is more of a melody wave, mm-hmm. right? So, but at the same time, we can't say that ain't hip hop, right? Because Humpty Dumpty Digital Underground had one wave, Coogee Rap had another wave, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying to you? So the wave that dominates now, of course, on the radio and in the clubs, I call it the escape wave, right? Because at the end of the day, so much bullshit goes on in the world, including myself. Mm-hmm. When I'm in a club, I do not want to hear nothing.
Right.
But party, bring me a drink, let me go crazy, carry me the fuck out this club, because the world is so damn crazy. Mm. So for me, I think that's why you get in a lot of escape music. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, you know, when you go into the club, now it's a safe haven for escape mm-hmm. until you go back to the real world on Monday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So once again, I always tell people be careful, because when you like, oh, you know, hip hop ain't hip hop no more, the artists, it's all there, and especially with the gigantic internet. And with all these streaming services, whatever you want, you could definitely get. Yeah. It's just the dominant force now is the melody rhyming.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy, though, too, though, because it feels like as much as people want to stereotype the current generation for being like that, then you look at a lot of the biggest selling rappers are like Kendrick, Chance, dudes who are like very specifically incredible at rapping.
Yeah, once again, like I told you, the cream always going to rise, right? At the end of the day, like, you know, you hear Kendrick, you hear Chance, you hear J. Cole. You know, at the same time, I could hear Thugger, I could hear Drake, I could let the mixture to me is definitely interesting. And I think that it's all there. I just think, like, a lot of times what I be hating is when motherfuckers can't keep up and then they got a story that they can't keep up. You feel what I'm saying? And I don't believe in that. It's like Game of Thrones. You either going to play to win or you not. If you decide that you're going to do this, if I decided I'm going to put an album out, I decide it got to be, you got to feel like you're competitive and ready to play at any time.
Do you think that sometimes being overtly lyrical could be a detriment to rappers now, and that a lot of times with the less rap skill being exhibited, that they're sort of trying to just blend in that regard?
I think as a producer, for me, a lyrical rapper, like Eminem is a lyrical rapper, right? So what Dr. Dre is able to do, right? 50 Cent, remember that album? Get Rich or Die Trying, right? As producers, the Fugees, the score. So if you lyrical, I'm able to take you and just paint that picture. But I think it's magical when the producer is working with the lyrical. The other side of it is much more easier because you're basically dealing with melodies. So a rapper that's lyrical, statistically, right? It's not like in our era, right? Because now you have Chance, Kendrick. You could say Drake, J. Cole. I'm just giving you a few. We keep going with a few. But like in our era, if you was like, you'd be like, you got 50 million you can name, you know what I'm saying to you? So for me, it's always two sides of the game, though. I said the lyrical and then the melodies, because as important as that is to me, the Futures, the Young Thugs, there's the things that they're doing as a singer, you know, as someone who loves melodies, is some of the most mind-boggling melodies that I've heard running through a tuner, you know what I mean?
Do you remember when you first found out about Young Thug and when you realized that he was a huge fan of you?
Well, Lior Cohen's reached out to my management team, label Madeline Nelson, and said Thugger was trying to get a hold of me. You know what I mean? And then I went to Atlanta and I seen Young Thug. I mean, once again, you know, our conversation was like uncle to nephew. You know what I'm saying to you? Like, he already know. Like, he studied. He understands the culture. So at the end of the day, we just connected as two musicians. Like, we was just in the studio, like, just two musicians. Because for the crowd, it might look like, yo, Wyclef and Young Thug, you know what I mean? But for us, it was just like two musicians. And when he played me a lot of his stuff that hasn't come out yet, some of the acoustic stuff against 808, a lot of amazing stuff, I was blown away. But I knew from certain things that he'd do, it just... certain melodies that he catch, it reminds me of something I would do, like, if I was like 25, you know what I mean?
Yeah, just he comes from such a wild place of experimentation and just constantly changing his flow up and stuff. Like, do you agree in the sense that it's really kind of something that we have never heard before in rap until he came out? Because I feel like he's so all over the place, there's almost nobody I can compare him to beforehand in rap.
Yeah, he's one of those. Like, before he came, other people was doing different things. Until today, I mean, I've been in the studio with Thugger. The way he phrases melodies, the way he jumps in and out of, you know, and everything is a different thing. Like, every time he's going to flow on something, he can adapt to anything and adjust the situation like a steering wheel on a car.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's great. I know that you only have, like, 8 minutes left. I know that you probably want to talk about the Carnival 3, your new project. You were just mentioning the uncle and nephew dynamic with Thug. You were saying that that's kind of something you're trying to bring with this new project too?
Yeah, I mean, the Carnival 3 is, you know, like you was like, yo, when you was nine, you feel me? Mm-hmm. Or when you was, it's 1997 meets 2017. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's the best Sonics combined together because it's all of the young producers that was listening to the Carnival and the Score, Super Mario, you know, Wavy Gang, the Knox, different. When we get together, and when they all came in, I know the Knox came in, they already had their record. They was like, yo, Unk, man, we trying to beat Staying Alive, man, from the Carnival. And it's so funny because the first record we did was like What Happened to Love. Mm-hmm. And it's you just the reaction alone is like, feels like a rooftop party. And so a lot of this natural, you when you do it so long, you could just tell when it's different, right? Mm-hmm. And what makes this different in the acceptance that it's naturally getting online, all the love, I think is because it's the combination of like both frequencies. If it was just like 97, you know what I mean? So what happened when you put that freaking guitar, I throw that Nirvana chorus against it, against some like drone drums is moving like at 152. It's just, you know, where is it gonna go? So for me, that's sort of like what makes the Carnival dope, three, and new artists like you've never heard of, you know what I mean? We got a artist by the name of Hannah, that one right there playing. She's mm-hmm. on the Carnival 3. We got other artists, Jazzy. We got, remember all my albums, if you look at them, I've always had people on the albums yeah. and then they blow up later. Mm-hmm. Like that also is like a Carnival theme, which is crazy. So for me, that's sort of like what makes this exciting. We shot five videos back to back. Like the director had to shoot a video a day, which was wow. crazy. So we were pop, 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 pop. And we got some interesting stuff, man. I'm really, really happy about it.
Yeah. What do you... So is it hard for you to find the motivation to keep making music and keep doing interviews and keep going out and touring and all this stuff when you've accomplished so much? Or do you still have that like inner drive that just compels you to do it?
I mean, you know, I was saying that. I was like, music is therapy. I don't have a psychiatrist. Ain't really nobody to talk to but my guitar, my instruments, when you feel in a certain way. For me, I don't do this. I do this for the love of the culture. Like, that's the first reason I do it. Like, right? So people be like, I mean, you know, it's you get paid to perform, you know what I mean? And your publishing catalog, it's worth kind of, you know what I mean? The more songs you write, and people be like, yo, I mean, why do Paul McCartney goes and perform every night? You know what I mean? You know, why does Mick Jagger goes and perform? Like, Tony Bennett, why? Like, at the end of the day, I mean, these dudes are sitting on $3 trillion more than I'm sitting on. Mm-hmm. Why? Because it was never about the next paycheck. It was about the art, you know what I mean? So you could definitely, I mean, when you hear my albums, man, this one, man, you're gonna be like, he took a 21-year-old shot, you know what I mean? It's all good.
That's amazing. Yeah. I feel like there's two different types of guys, like as they get older, in the sense that some musicians just want to keep, like Mick Jagger, he just wants to keep playing for the rest of his life. He'll be on stage till he's in a freaking wheelchair.
Yeah.
And but then there's a lot of dudes who accomplish a lot and then decide that they want that accomplishing new and different things is what motivates them. And it's really interesting for you because you have such a clear example of that. You went and tried to be fucking president, tried to change the world like that, and now you're kind of coming back to your roots, coming back to earth and working with all these young people again.
Yeah. And that's it. I mean, to me, that's dope. You know what I'm saying to you? So it's like, for me, when we could change information, I remember like being in Stockholm with Avicii, like Tim, like a couple of years ago, and just like experimenting like with software, with different things. Because once again, when we all sit, we're not looking at it like, oh, EDM producer, hip-hop, we don't even know what that means. We just sit on it like, yo, let's just try to do some good music together. You know what I mean?
Totally. Man, you're the real deal. I was nervous as hell for this interview.
Cause nah.
Just such a crazy level of influence since I was, before I even can barely remember, you know?
Nah, it's all love, man. Trust me, I got nervous like that when I was in the studio with Whitney Houston because that'll it tripped it. Me the hell out because like they was like, yo, you got to write a song for Whitney. I was like, what? And So I'm about to meet Whitney, and now I'm having flashbacks in my brain, like going into the room. But in my brain, all I could see is like graduation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
all those moments you shared with 10th, her.
11th yeah. grade, you know what I mean? And we all singing, I Believe the Children Are the Future. And the door's going to open, and it's going to be Whitney. So I definitely dig that, but I think that's what makes it incredible. Like when one person could touch another person touch another person. That's dope.
Yeah, man. Well, I guess like the whole culture really needs to issue you your thank you for just blowing open the doors at an early age, because it might have took a lot longer for rap music to continue to progress if you hadn't been there to bust it open.
Nah. Yeah. Could you hit a guitar?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Tune in. Yeah. I got them bars over guitars. Bars over guitars. Why Clef Jean got them bars over guitars? Bars over guitars. Bars over guitars. Why Clef Jean got... Hey, yo, my life started out in a small village. I ate dirt from the floor, homie, no kidding. I ain't had no kitchen. Grandma said, pray to Christ. This Jesus baby barely had a bag of rice. My life started out, I was barely two. Papa flew to the States, put me in the Golden Goose. Landed in America, I bring the drama. I stay close cause I smoke marijuana. Go on my Instagram, check my profile. I work 36 chambers just to get this stat now. Then it's back in Brooklyn, I'm in the zoo with Osiris. Seen niggas snatch more gold than the pirates. Gone to November, man, I'm out of my mind. I should have been selling paintings like JJ from Good Times. They said I changed ever since I got the wealth. Now I ain't changed, boy, just hard battling myself. Ain't no competition in the land of the lost. Ever since an intern, I always wanted to be boss. Never thought I'd get paid for my penmanship. If I'm at the gentleman club, it's free memberships. Television, man, I'm watching and using. It look like another body in the loo, and he up in the sewer, his tie and his shoes, laying like he in a Kennedy coupe. Banana clip, the man come from the zoo, where the guerrilla military do the coup. I assume that you knew they were coming for you, because Scooby and Shaggy gave me the clue. Your boy Y Clayze.
Wow. I feel so honored. I think I kind of have the chills too. Hey, rest in peace, Old Dirty Bastard.
Old Dirty Bastard, my man Prodigy. Rest in
everybody.
Peace.
Rest in peace, Whitney. Wyclef, thank you so much, man. It's a real honor.
You already know, fam. Love.
Thank you, bro. Yep. Hey, No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube,
no
SoundCloud.
Jumper. Oh, let me give y'all the crazy.
Oh, okay. Here we go. Balling like an athlete, but got no jumper. That's our slogan. Balling like an athlete, but got no jumper.
Balling like an athlete, but got no jumper. Yeah. Balling like an athlete, and got no jumper. This is why Clef Jean, yeah. There you go. You got your own drop, man.
Amazing, man. We could stop biting off Gucci now. We got a clip of Gucci saying it for our intro. All we might have to switch it up.
You already know. That's my God. Man. Shout out to Gucci. Dude.
Amazing. Thank you, Wyclef. Appreciate it. Thank you. Everybody at home, I hope you appreciate what you just saw. Iconic. Thank you, man.
Thank you.